Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime football and basketball beat reporter Jim Polzin. And Jim, it's another Wednesday morning, and it's another people are very angry week with the Badger men's basketball team. We got a lot to talk about there, but just when you wake up this morning after you watch this game again, that they lost last night against Purdue, a close one down at Mackey, but just what's your kind of pulse for how people are feeling right now about this team?
Yeah, people are frustrated, and I get it. This one was winnable. You know, that's the frustrating part. There's been games during this stretch against really good teams where, you know, they fall behind early and play catch up the whole way. This one was right there the entire time. I don't think they were ever down by more than 5 points. They led early. It's really close late, and, you know, just – I think Nate Ravers, as cliche as it sounds, said it best. Purdue made more plays down the stretch, and that's true. I mean, Purdue executed really well down the stretch. Wisconsin did not. And the disappointing part about that is that this is a Wisconsin team loaded with experience and seniors. That's a Purdue team loaded with inexperience and freshmen.
Yeah, that's
– And if one's going to show poise and execute down the stretch, you'd expect it to be the team that's older, and that just hasn't been the case. So I think that's my biggest takeaway is just, I can understand why people are frustrated because for that very reason.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get into a lot more on that Purdue game, that loss on Tuesday night for the Badgers, and kind of look ahead to what's coming up for them as they wrap up the regular season and start looking toward the Big Ten and NCAA tournaments. So lots of stuff with Jim there. Not a ton of football this week going on, kind of a slow week as they get closer to pro day start, or that's next week, and then spring practices start later on in March. So we'll get into football later this month. But we brought Todd Molesky back by popular demand. Lots of people liked having Todd on, hearing about hockey. So lots of stuff with him about Cole Caulfield's big weekend over at Ohio State for the Badgers. What the two goalie system that they've been going to the last 5-6 weeks has been doing. So lots of good information there from Todd. So make sure you stick around for the second half of the podcast for that. But Jim and I have a lot of basketball to get into right after this. All right, Jim, let's look at this Purdue game. Cause I think you said it really good in the opening there is that this game was a game. It was right there. Obviously it was a close game. It was less than 5 points. But this is one of those times where it's frustrating as if you're a Badger fan, because you think that, I don't know, maybe it's just one of those things where the expectations of what this team is were outsized or not entirely fair. But in a game like that where you're right in it, you think you've got multiple guys that you can create a shot for and all this other stuff. Basically, the last three possessions boiled down to here, Dimitri, figure it out.
Yeah, and Purdue did a really good job. I mean, I think that's always one thing you got to mention when execution isn't good down the stretch for a team, is that the other team plays a role in that. And I thought Purdue blew up some of the stuff Wisconsin wanted to do. They, you know, they switched a couple times. At one point, they got Wheeler on Trice, and Trice has to shoot over a guy who's, you know, I don't know, Wheeler's listed as 6'9" or something. It's a tough shot, and you would have liked to have seen Wisconsin get something better in that situation. But I do credit Purdue with, you know, kind of blowing up what Wisconsin wanted to do.
And that was part that I guess, I don't know. So I actually wanted to ask you about this just from a game plan strategy standpoint. Badgers had the ball with, I don't know, I think they came across court like 1:45 left, and they call a timeout right away. They only had two, or they had three left at that point. Yeah, they had three left at that point. They call a timeout right when they cross half court. Then they don't get the action they want on the inbound play. Potter gets stuck with the ball kind of in a weird short corner spot. Nobody is close to him. And they have to call another timeout there to make sure that he doesn't get a 5-second call and turn it over. Not that I'm going to litigate if they should have called the ball when Potter got stuck there. Or that's a timeout you have to take just to ensure you keep the possession. I didn't love the stopping the flow of the game to draw something up at 1:45. Cause I felt like, yeah, they weren't playing great on offense, but it wasn't like they were terrible. They were doing okay. I just thought that burning a timeout there when you knew it was going to be a back and forth, you're going to need as many timeouts as you have Dame. It's kind of a questionable call. And maybe it's a nitpicking call from the outside. I don't know. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I didn't think about it at the time. I think you make a good point, especially since to that point, you know, I'm just looking over my possessions.
Mm-hmm.
The offense had been doing pretty well. They actually, okay, so they scored on four straight possessions, four free throws, Potter three-point play, Davison hits a three from the right wing, Potter scores on a putback, and then the next possession, Ford gets a wide open look from the left wing.
Yes.
Yep. Goes in and out. So, I mean, they don't score there, but that's five productive possessions. So maybe you're right. And I didn't, you know, again, I didn't think of this at the time. I thought the timeout was okay there, but it looks worse when you don't get anything out of it. Right.
I mean, sure. It's hindsight, but
right. You need to get something out of it. And they didn't. And again, like I do want to give credit to Purdue for blowing up whatever they wanted to do there. But you're right to give Purdue the opportunity to set its defense and probably know what's coming to a certain degree, because I think this Wisconsin offense is pretty predictable. You're right. They're going to want to get the ball in Trice's hand. There's going to be a high ball screen. And if that doesn't happen, then what's next? And it ended up in a bad spot in Potter's hands, and they kind of had to reset. And then you ended up with a fourth shot off of that. So it was just an ugly possession at a time where you really needed points. I mean, I think getting to the basket and getting two there would have been fine. I mean, that you still have plenty of time at that point.
Right. And you mentioned the Ford three-pointer that didn't go down, and that was a perfect look set up by the pick and pop to Potter. That's a tough one to say. And Potter makes the extra pass and gets Ford a wide open look. And then of course it just doesn't go down. And that's, I was going to tweet something about like, well, that's like Wisconsin season right there. Like even when they do stuff right, that's not working out in the end. They go 9 of 29, or excuse me. I have the wrong stand from me. That was on our notes.
Seven of 29.
I mean, this team's has too many good shooters for that to be their numbers. Like, it's just weird how just consistently the ball is not going in for this team.
Yeah. So I went back and charted every possession again this morning. Of those 22 misses, I categorized 10 of those misses as quality looks. Like either wide open, open is my other category, like where it's not, you know, where there's someone within range, but it's still a look you need to knock down, or decent, where again, like I'm being pretty conservative there. I feel like it's a shot they should knock down. You're not going to make all 10 of those, but I mean, four of them, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
make four of them. That's 12 more points. You win that game pretty easily. And that's the difference. And this team just, I'll get into it later. I went through some things in the second half that they just didn't do well, that that this team needs to do well. I mean, just little things that they didn't do well, but it really boils down to making shots, and they're there. I mean, the shots are there at times. Now they do get a little 3-point happy. I think it was frustrating when they got in the bonus with like 12:38 that their next four shots were jump shots, and three of them were three-pointers. I think that's where you got to, you know, get the ball in the post and try to make something happen. And if it's not there, you can still get the same shot you ended up getting later in the clock. But I think they get a little bit too perimeter happy at times and settle when they could be attacking more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it was interesting because I think I had in my notes that pretty sure both teams were in the bonus with like 9 minutes left.
Yep.
And even the announcers were talking about it in the broadcast that that's so rare for a Wisconsin game to have that many fouls. But I got to say, there were not that many that I thought were ticky-tack. I thought both teams were kind of clubbing each other and the refs just weren't having it. And I don't know if they were just hoping that the refs would eventually adjust, but I don't know. I thought the foul – I mean, I saw some people complaining about the fouls ruining the flow of the game and, like, not making it as fun to watch. But I didn't see that many that jumped out immediately as – that shouldn't have been called.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a physical game, and I agree with you. I didn't see any of the ticky tack variety. There were some reaches. There was one possession where Purdue had four fouls.
Yeah, that was.
and I think that was one of the moments where I charted where, like, you know, I'll just go to that one right now. So Purdue's called for four fouls in one possession. One of those in which Reavers makes the shot and gets fouled. He misses the free throw, but Wall gets the rebound. And then The possession ends with Reavers settling for a 17-foot jumper with 19 seconds left on the clock. That's kind of a perfect theme of a frustrating possession for this team. You've just forced the other team into four fouls. Don't settle for a jumper on that possession. You know, try to get the ball in the 10-foot zone, which again never happened. And Reavers made some jumpers last night, but I think that was a time where he could have tried to get something better. There's 19 seconds to work with there, and that was one of the many frustrating things in the second half.
Sure, and I think the thing that was the most frustrating, just as a person watching the game, was how often and easy Edie from Purdue made it look to score inside against the Badgers. And you've got in our notes here, I want to hear your thoughts as somebody that really kind of dissected this game. What was going on in the post defense, and what did you see from Nate Reavers and Micah Potter that may have contributed to that, or kind of the balancing it out there?
Yeah, so when I made ideas for show notes last night, I hadn't watched the game a second time, and my initial feeling was, yes, Reavers and Potter need to do better, but could the guys guarding the entry pass have done better of not making it such an easy pass? And they probably could have, yes, but there were times where, you know, like I can remember a couple situations where Ford is guarding somebody on the perimeter and he's right there. I mean, he's making the pass difficult. Edie's such a huge target, and they let him get too deep. The bigger problem I thought was not only let him catch the ball where he did, but they constantly let him get to his right. And I would have liked to have seen them force him to his left. I know a lot of people were saying, oh, can you front him? You know, they should have fronted him. I think that's Purdue just lobs at that point.
Yeah. Not when you're giving up 5 and 7 inches respectively between those two.
Right. Could the backside help have been better? Yes. But you know, Purdue does a really good job of spacing the floor. They did a really good job of putting Stefanovic on the same side as Edie. So if that guy comes and helps, you're leaving one of the better 3-point shooters in the Big Ten open. So my frustrating things that happened. Here's another one. So Ford actually did a really good job on one of the possessions of providing backside help to Edie to prevent an entry pass. But then Stefanovic drives on Davison, and Ford, for some reason, steps in to help, even though Stefanovic is going away from the basket. So Ford recovers and then helps on the drive, which leaves Wheeler wide open in the corner for a 3-pointer. It's just, he did a really good job to start the possession of helping, but then his second help was unnecessary and left a 3-point shooter alone. I also want to say this, Wheeler was shooting 22.2% from 3-point range coming into this game. He went 3 for 3 last night. So that's just one of those things where this team really needs a break. It needs to catch a break, and it can't catch a break. Right. I mean, but that possession is kind of an example of just, I don't know, thinking too much or trying to do too much. Ford didn't need to help a second time there. He didn't need to help on Stefanovic, and he left his guy wide open, and it ends up in 3 points that were pretty big in the game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm going to introduce a bit to the show here and to Jim here, and maybe this is something that we carry into next season. I kind of thought about it just watching it. Jim does a much better job of actually understanding what's happening. I just mostly complain about when the Badgers aren't doing well on the basketball court. So we're going to do watcher versus reporter. I'll be the watcher and just kind of throw out bad takes and or just uneducated ones and see where I'm right and wrong to Jim here as a reporter. So the first one, I've got two for you today, Jim. First one I have is that I don't think Micah Potter realizes that he's like 7 foot tall or like a larger human being, because not only, I mean, we talked about it before, his 3-point shooting is an asset to the team, but I don't think he posts up and up on offense. But on defense, he got in foul trouble, really limited himself in the first half. And then the second half, he allowed 2 and-ones at the rim for his 3rd and 4th foul, which pretty much killed any type of physicality you could have for the last 5 minutes. And to me, like, if you're going to foul, like, make it worth it. Hack him and don't let the shot get up. I know Edie's 7'4", but just go at his arms and don't let the shot get there if you're going to foul.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a defense of Potter. I'll point out two things. I mean, he's 6'10". He's given up 6 inches, and I think I calculated it, 25 pounds to Edie. So not easy there. But, again, him and both Potter and Reavers need to do a better job of not letting those guys, whether it's Williams, Edie, Dickinson, Coburn, you know, all those guys establish good position. There's one of those and ones, Potter trips over Williams' feet while getting into position. And then that allows Williams to get a really good touch and leads to a foul. So again, that's a situation of kind of dumb luck where Potter trips and loses any position, any chance of establishing position as a defender. And then the possession just goes to hell from there.
Sure.
I think the overall theme though, that is obvious and is a big problem with this team is all those guys I just mentioned, Dickinson, Coburn, Williams and Edie last night, Garza. When those teams need baskets, they can count on going to those guys in the post. When Wisconsin needs baskets, it's not getting enough production from Potter and Reavers in the post. Those guys, you know, as much as they want to get the ball in the 10-foot zone, it's not a real efficient rate that Wisconsin scores when they do get the ball to Reavers and Potter. Those guys just have not proven they can score consistently in the post. And so that's Wisconsin's at a disadvantage almost every game against all these good teams is that the other team is so much better going through their five man than Wisconsin is. And to counter that, Wisconsin has guys that in theory are supposed to be better shooters, right? Mm-hmm. In those games and really all season for Reavers, they've not knocked down enough 3-point shots. If the idea is to draw those big men away from the basket and force them to decide, well, am I going to get out of the paint to guard a Potter or a Reavers on the 3-point range? Or am I going to stay here and let them shoot? Potter and Reavers just aren't making these guys pay enough for that. I mean, Reavers had three wide open looks last night, mm-hmm. 3-point range, missed them all. Potter was one of three. I go back to the Illinois game, the first Illinois game, Potter was 0-for-5 with good looks. You know, this offense is having its big men go away from the basket and try to convert. And it's not working, right? It's just, mm-hmm. it's not producing at the rate it should. So that's the frustrating thing. I think if for Wisconsin is just what the game plan is, what's supposed to be working, what worked last year is not working.
For sure. And it's such a departure because you look at, I mean, obviously last year it was the same roster. And I mean, Reavers was having a better year in the post and offensively just overall, but there was basically almost a decade there between Kaminsky and Happ where the Badgers center was about as sure of 2 points as you could get in the conference. And it's just not there right now. And that's definitely a big contributing factor to this offense not being what it can be at times.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing, I mean, not only were Kaminsky and Happ good in the post at finishing, although I think Ethan struggled late in his career and probably didn't finish at the rate that, you know, he would have hoped, but they were also good passers, right? So when they did get doubled, those guys would burn the opponents by finding the open man. I don't think Potter and Reavers necessarily are good passers. I don't have the stats up in front of me. But they definitely, there's not enough assists from those guys. The assist to turnover ratio isn't good enough from those guys. I got it right now. Potter's got 33 assists in 26 games. You know, that's not enough. Reavers has 16 in 26 games. That's not enough. Now, some of that is there probably have been times where they found open shooters and the guys don't make the shots.
Fair.
But you know, I just don't, they're not good post players. And that's a problem, right? That's part of the reason why this offense isn't functioning is they're not getting enough production from their post players.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So one more watcher versus reporter here. I find Aleem Ford to be arguably the most frustrating basketball player I've ever seen because he's so streaky that he's too good when he's on to not have on the floor because you never know when on's going to happen. And he's a good defender. Like I'll give him that point, but it's just, night to night, you have no idea what he's going to do offensively. And throughout this year, there's been, I think, a couple of exceptions. But night to night, you can kind of count on this year, there's not going to be much on offense.
Yeah, he had come into this game. I think I had put in my advance that he was like 3-of-24 over three games. He went 4-of-9 last night. You know, he at times, I think, is one of those guys where I think gets a little bit too perimeter happy, takes shots that probably could be there later in the shot clock. Doesn't necessarily finish at the rate that he should. He was 0-of-9 on two pointers in the three previous games, did a little bit better job last night, But you're right. I mean, he's improved during his career, but he never made that jump. And I think I don't think he made a jump at all from junior to senior years. I think he's largely the same guy he was last year. And his numbers are actually down. I actually crunched the numbers the other day. I haven't updated much the Purdue game, but like Trice is really the only guy who's shooting better than he did last year of the five or six guys that are most involved in the offense. Trice's numbers have gone up. Potter's numbers are, you know, still okay for a big man, but his 3-point percentage is way down. And I think, you know, 45% probably wasn't sustainable. Sure. But that's down. And the other three have gone down significantly in terms of shooting percentages, both twos and threes. So it's hard to win that way. If three of your seniors, three guys you're counting on, aren't producing like they were a year ago. I mean, that's a huge difference.
Yeah. And on the forward side of it a little bit here, the fact that he in the starting lineup, at least, is, I would say it's him and Trice are the only guys I really trust with the ball in their hand going toward the basket. And you said it, he gets too perimeter happy where he doesn't take advantage of that. And maybe it's because he's not finishing well. And the Big Ten's had a really tough cadre of big men to go in against this year. So maybe that's a factor in it too. But when you're one of the few guys on the team that has that advantage and it's not used very often, it's just like kind of throwing away one of the things that could get the team going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they need, I was on a radio show this morning and I'm like, they don't need a Ford, Reavers, and Davison. They don't need all three of them to be hot, but they can't have all three of them be as inefficient as they have. You know, you can't win that way. This team's not talented enough to win that way. Can I get to two more things from the second half that stood out to me?
Absolutely.
It's basically one of them I kind of mentioned, but there was one sequence that really bothered me. So Davison gets the ball in the post. He kind of makes a up and under move, point blank range, misses his shot, and then makes it worse by not really hustling back full. You know, I don't think he went back 100%. So Purdue pushed the ball that left Wall in a really tough spot where he's got Hunter coming right at him and he's supposed to be guarding Stefanovic. So his options are stop the ball or leave Stefanovic wide open in the corner. He tried to fake Hunter into passing the ball. Hunter kept it. And Hunter missed a shot at the rim, but Reavers had to come over and help in the process and try to, you know, since Hunter's going to the rim, you know, unguarded, Reavers comes over to help. Hunter misses the shot, but Williams is right there. Since there's nobody then guarding Williams, he's right there for a putback. So that's like a 4-point swing there where Davison, whose struggles from 2-point shots have been well documented. You know, I feel like I put those numbers in almost every story. Not only does he not finish on one end, but then him not getting back leads to 2 points on the other end. And that's a 4-point swing. That's huge in a close game, right? I mentioned the getting in the bonus at 12:38. And then the next four shots were all jumpers. And then Wisconsin finally goes to the rim on the next possession. Davison drives to the rim and gets fouled. And he misses the front end of a bonus situation. And again, I get you're going to miss some free throws, but this team's margin for error isn't big enough that you can afford to waste those chances. He's one of their best free throw shooters. You need to make free throws there. Reavers had some misses on free throws. Wall went 1 of 2 on 1 of 6. Like, you just can't leave points on the board when you're shooting the way you are from 3-point range. And that's, you know, you can pick apart a million different things in the second half that would have led to a different result. And again, it's just not happening.
Yeah. And to your point about Davison, not to pile on or anything, but I saw on Reddit before the game last night that of guys that have at least 75 attempts of 2-point shots, he's like the least efficient 2-point shooter since 2008 in all of college basketball or Division I college basketball. So it's like, it's borderline historic, the struggles that he's having inside the arc.
It's crazy to go back and watch game after game after game. Some of them are good looks. Some of them are wide open looks in the paint, but he's just not hitting and he's not finishing. I mean, sometimes he shoots step back jumpers that are questionable, especially for a guy that's not making 2-point shots. I'd like to see them get something better out of that possession. Last night they opened the game. He shoots a long 2-pointer. Like, I mean, it's just a matter of his foot was on the line, right? The most inefficient shot in the game is when your foot's on the line for a 3-point shot and he misses it. So, yeah, I mean, again, this team should be executing better. They're old enough, they're experienced enough that we shouldn't be having to nitpick bad shots, right? It's not good.
Yeah. And if you guys are starting to feel like this is a little bit repetitive from other podcasts, believe me, Jim and I texted about that. This team basically does the same thing week to week, game after game. So we're going to get off the Badgers a little bit and do a little bit more of an overview of the Big Ten real quick, just to spice up the podcast here a little bit. But right before the Badgers tipped off with Purdue, Illinois finished off what I would argue is one of the most impressive wins in the Big Ten this year. Not only do they beat Michigan by, I think, 20, or maybe ended up being a little bit less than 20, but either way, they were up at almost 30 points at points in that game. But to do all of that without Io DeSunmu because of the face injury that he's got going on, just dominating them or dominating Michigan in with defense mostly. I mean, they did not play all that great offensively, but they just would not let Michigan score. And it was crazy to see that happen on Michigan's floor.
Yeah, I mean, Illinois is now 3-0 without DeSunmu in the lineup. Two of those wins are on the road against ranked teams. It's just been really impressive. I was a little skeptical of Andre Curbelo, their freshman point guard. He did not play particularly well down in Champaign when the Badgers played there. But he's looked really, really good during this stretch without DeSunmu. He's got some wiggle. He's able to get to the rim. He's got, you know, I think the thing that stands out about Illinois is they've got attitude. They are tough. They're tough minded. They play tough. Nothing seems to bother them. They've seemed to have it all, especially if DeSunmu can come back and be, you know, like his former self. They've got shooters. They've got clearly got a big postman they can go through. And like you said, they defend. I think that's been the impressive thing is they've really defended. When Brad Underwood first got in this league, they played this kind of pressure defense and it did not work. All they did was foul all the time and it didn't work. So he's kind of backed off of that, but they still play really hard in those defense. They make life tough on you. And they've got guys that can switch. Miller, Grandison, you can basically switch defenders and on screens and not have any drop off. And they're good. They're Final Four good.
Yeah. And you mentioned the attitude. And I think that really starts with Coburn, because when he gets the ball in the post, he'll pass if he has to, but he is not looking to give it up. He's looking to go through somebody and dunk. I mean, we saw that against Wisconsin, obviously, but I mean, he is as physically trying to impose his physicality on the games more than I think a lot of big men in basketball right now. And I mean, everybody, you know, throws out Shaq comparisons to anybody that's big and does that. But I mean, this guy actually plays with that similar type of physicality where he's trying to bowl over people. And I love watching that. And then to see these other guys start to figure some things out without having to have every play kind of be created through DeSunmu now that he's out. I mean, not that him not playing is good and him potentially getting rusty before the postseason is a good thing, but maybe it ends up being a blessing in disguise that makes him a little deeper going into the postseason.
Yeah, because for a long time I wondered, well, can this team survive an off night from DeSunmu? Now they got other guys that have confidence and proven they can make shots and take over if things aren't going well for him. So the other guy I want to mention, that team that I think, you know, is very underrated, is Damani Williams. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't score. I think he had 12 against Wisconsin, 10 or 12 against Wisconsin. But he just, you know, not a huge guy, but seems to get enough offensive rebounds. He's a good defender. He's scrappy. I think he's tough. Like, he's kind of what that team, he's kind of the epitome of that team, just in terms of he's not going to take crap from you. And I think he's a big reason they win games. They have other stars on that team, but I think Williams is the exact type of player you need if you're going to be a really good team.
Sure. I asked you this a couple of weeks ago, and you said that Juwan Howard was in the lead, but has anything over the last few weeks changed what you think about Big Ten Coach of the Year so far?
No, I still think it's Howard. I do, you know, I bet Underwood would probably be my second choice. You know, and frankly, like, I know we're going to get into Iowa a little bit. I think Fran McCaffrey's done a really good job too. You know, I was highly skeptical of Iowa coming this season, knew they could score, just didn't think they'd be able to defend, and wondered about them kind of taking on the the attitude of their head coach, you know, who tends to go ballistic at times. I think if you look over the last maybe 5-6 games, they've played a lot better defense. And if they can do that, they don't have to be great defensively because they're so good offensively. If they can do that, that's another team I can see in the Final Four. They very much look the part of a Final Four team. They, to some degree, I don't want to say they remind me of 2015 Wisconsin, but there are some similarities in that they have a dominant post player, Garza and Kaminsky. Mm-hmm. And Decker came on that year and really exploded. Wieskamp is doing the same thing. And then they have some really nice surrounding pieces. That Wisconsin team was not a great defensive team. It was just so efficient offensively. And that's kind of the same way with this Iowa team. And they're deep. They lose Jack Nungy. And I don't know that's going to hurt all that much because you got guys like Keegan Murray and others who can step in. So I have to say I was wrong about Iowa. I just, if anybody fell in that 10-9, seventh place range that Wisconsin finds itself in, I would have guessed of the contenders that it would have been Iowa when the season began. But I was clearly wrong.
See, I don't know if you are wrong, though. I think Iowa – like figured out mid-season when they who'd they lose to? Minnesota. I think that Minnesota loss really shook Iowa's cage a little bit and kind of made them realize, hey, we've got to step it up on defense. So I don't know if you were entirely wrong, but I think they've also, and I don't have stats to back this up, so maybe I shouldn't say this, but I think they've been more efficient and less focused on speed on offense because we haven't seen them have those like high 90, 100 point games that they were having earlier in the season than they had at points last season where they were just making and jacking up threes early in the shot clock. I think that they've kind of balanced out a little bit. They know they can be good offensively and efficient, but I don't think they're trying to be as fast and kind of outpace teams. And I think that's helped them on defense because it's slowing the game down just a little bit. And I think they're able to focus a little bit more on that end.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, here's what they've allowed the last 6 games. 66 points to Rutgers, 58 to Michigan State, 62 to Wisconsin, 68 to Penn State. They got beat 79-57 at Michigan, and they only allowed 57 points to Ohio State, which is one of the better offensive teams in the country. Probably going to end up with wins against Nebraska and Wisconsin. You know, that puts them, it's going to put them at 14-6 in the Big Ten and probably, you know, second or third place. So, yeah, I think they've figured it out. They've, you know, since February 7th, they've only lost once, and I can seriously see them making, now they're going to have to shoot well, but I can see them making a run in March. Mm. I think they have the team that's built for it.
That or a second round flame out where McCaffrey gets tossed in like the 10 minutes in the first half after a bad foul call.
Always possible. And that'll, that'll completely change the narrative of that team too, you know, of course, but, I'm sitting here making predictions without actually seeing a bracket too. And I've also realized that I've probably said, there's 3 Big Ten teams that are in the final, that are Final Four worthy, and that's not going to happen either, right? I don't know.
I don't know, man. I mean, I was flipping around games last night, and like, I haven't been as dialed into outside of Big Ten basketball and / Wisconsin basketball, but like, Alabama's a top 10 team. Wasn't even aware they were good at basketball this year, and it's like, I honestly haven't seen enough of. I guess Baylor is the one that I know is real and is a legit top 5 team, but I'm still kind of on the fence about Gonzaga, not as a program. I'm just talking about this current Gonzaga team. And it's because they weren't able to play some of these non-conference games that they had scheduled against some of the best teams. But I'm a little more skeptical of everybody penciling in Gonzaga and Baylor. Like if there's going to be a year where the Big Ten could send 3 to a Final Four, this would be it.
Yeah. This is probably a good segue into kind of the last part of our conversation when we're talking about like bracketology and stuff is that I had a lot of people on Twitter last night. One in particular said, this is an NIT team. You know, they're going to lose Sunday. They're going to lose first round of Big Ten. They're going to be 16-12 and that's an NIT resume. And, you know, as much as this team has been disappointing, I'm not going to argue that. It still has the resume of an NCAA tournament team. Like that's just silly to say otherwise. If you look around the rest of college basketball, and it's part of the reason why they're still ranked. Like people can't get over that either. Like, why is this team still ranked? Because everybody in the 20 to 35 range loses every week, you know, right. And Wisconsin's losing to better teams. That's the biggest thing is you look at the SEC and yes, I've watched Alabama enough to know that they're a good team. They defend really well. They can make shots at times, but the rest of that league is pretty crappy. The ACC is down this year. Mm-hmm. There's beyond a couple of top teams. Virginia, like you look at Virginia, they're probably the second best team in the ACC. They're 16-6, and they don't have a ton of quality victories on their resume. The Pac-12 isn't anything special. So it's really the Big 12 and the Big 10 is where a lot of these top teams are coming from. And, you know, Wisconsin just happens to be losing to a lot of those teams in the Big 10. And I understand, again, like, I wouldn't say this team's going to be in the Sweet 16, but they're certainly a NCAA tournament resume. Just happens that most of the work was done in December and to some degree early January.
Right. So just to give you guys a little bit of a picture of where Wisconsin stands right now, I would say the consensus right now, you're going to have Joe Lunardi, some of the other guys, is a 6 seed at the moment. And maybe that changes depending on what happens to the Big Ten tournament. If they were to flame out, maybe it drops down to a 7. But 6 or a 7 right now are the two most likely. And then you get into some weird – you're more than likely playing a solid mid-major conference champion that was an automatic qualifier on that line. So I think that's a little bit concerning if you're Wisconsin, because maybe you were hoping to catch either one of the lower tier teams or a Power 5 school that's a little bit or closer to the middle of their conference. That'd be a better matchup. I just think that there's a lot of teams that, as we've seen, there's a lot of teams in a lot of ways that you can beat this Wisconsin team. And there's some matchups that are very concerning at that 6-7 line, I feel like.
Yeah, like Wisconsin, you know, they've kind of played themselves into a bad position here. Like the more you drop in the seeds, if you're a 7, you're going to get, you know, probably a pretty tough first round matchup. And you're also looking at a pretty tough, if you do get by that, you're looking at a 2 seed in the second round. So these losses, you know, they had a chance last night to get a quality win that would have boosted their resume. It would have gave them a quality win that they haven't had in a couple of months. So, and again, if they lose Sunday and in the first round down in Indy, I don't know what the floor is for them from a seeding standpoint. Are they an 8-9? You know, do they drop as low as 9 in that scenario? I don't know. Cause again, it'd be an interesting case study because they haven't had a good win since basically
December. Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can say at Rutgers beating another 9-ish seed in mid-January. I think Maryland's going to make the tournament. They won a road game there in January. So those are quality wins. Those are games I would call as quality wins, but you know, 0-7 now against ranked teams since calendar flipped to 2021. And I'd be curious to see how the selection committee would view a Wisconsin team that's 16-12.
Yeah. It's so strange to think that this is the situation they're in, but there's just, if let's say they were to follow that 7 line, I mean, you're more than likely going to see one of the better, maybe an Ohio State or maybe an Illinois if they don't get on the 1 line. Like there's possibly a Big Ten team waiting for you in the second round if you get on that 7 line.
I don't know if that's possible. I think they committee would probably avoid that. But even worse, then you're still facing a really good team, a Houston, an Alabama. You know, you're still facing a really, really tough 2 seed. A couple of weeks ago, I looked at it and I'm like, you know, there's some 3 seeds that are really good teams, but not necessarily scary. So if Wisconsin can just stick at the 6, like I've kind of been maintaining that, just get out of Big Ten play, right? I mean, just start, hit the refresh button. If you're a 6 seed, win your first game. And I think you have a fighting chance in the 3-6 game. But I don't know that, I think they've kind of played themselves off that line now and are probably more likely a 7 or, like I said, maybe an 8.
Yeah, that's tough. And I'm glad you haven't had to travel to a lot of these games, because watching the exact, like, I felt that a little bit in football where it was always like, well, receivers aren't going to do anything. Oh, running game not getting going. Well, here comes punt fest. I feel like the basketball team has kind of fallen in that rut of, if the threes aren't going down, it's either going to be a blowout or a tight game that they lose because something doesn't, or that things don't break their way.
Yeah, I think we mentioned, like, I don't think we were recording at the time, but I think last night was like their third most efficient offensive game in Big Ten play. For as much as times we spent on this offense, I think there was only 2 better. And that was with a 7-for-29 three-point performance. it was one of their worst defensive performances in terms of efficiency, and in part because they gave up 36 points in the paint in a 60 possession game. That's just, you know, that's just way too much. They couldn't stop the interior.
For sure. All right. Well, as we wrap up here, Jim, what do you got in the hopper here for the weekend, getting ready for this Iowa game to wrap up the regular season?
Yeah, I talked to Nate Reavers last week. We can do something on him. He's got an interesting story. I know it's been a frustrating year, and we got into that. But there's, you know, we kind of – I think he's able to kind of take the big picture look at what he's accomplished here, and he's got an interesting story. So that's going to be my Sunday story.
Gotcha. All right, so make sure you guys are on Madison.com checking all that out. Make sure you're following Jim on Twitter, Jim Polzine, WSJ, and lots of good stuff basketball-wise. Hopefully they can turn some of these wins and losses around for everybody so people aren't so mad. I thought the Twitter reaction, reactions you guys can read on Madison.com last night were some pretty good ones, because I will give Wisconsin fans credit. When things are going bad, at least they can be a little bit funny about it. Like, just the misery that they will share is pretty entertaining at times.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of, like, we talked before the show, like, we're not going to get into any big picture state of the program stuff until after the season. I don't think it makes sense to do that during the season. But a lot of people are making state of the program and big picture. They're having those conversations. So, you know, I get it. Fans are frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so make sure you're checking out Madison.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Todd Molesky talking about Badger hockey. All right, everybody, we are back by popular demand with Todd Molesky to talk more Badger hockey. Got a lot of feedback on liking to hear the hockey input, especially as we get closer to the tournament time. So always happy to have Todd on. Lots of good stuff. And just for people that don't know, we talked a lot about men's and women's hockey last week, but pretty much all season, these games have been going on simultaneously on the weekend. And Todd's been trying to cover both at the same time, watching one while he's in person watching another. So what you see from us on our men's and women's hockey coverage, it's coming from the same guy doing them at the same time. So
emphasis respect on trying, yeah, not always succeeding in making it a real fair look at a game, but yeah, trying.
For sure. Definitely. But just respect the hustle and the difficulty that takes there. So lots to get into. We're going to focus a little bit more on the men's hockey side today, 'cause that's where Todd was able to watch last weekend. And that was a pretty huge series for this Badgers men's hockey team, picking up a sweep over Ohio State. They won 2-1 in overtime on Friday, and then on Saturday, just shellacking. It was 7-0. They ran away with it. What were some of your big takeaways from the series overall, and just how they played, the big differences between those two games where it was so close on Friday, and then the Badgers really kind of took it to them on Saturday?
Yeah, I think that gives you a better look at how the team can play different ways and still kind of get out of it in looking okay. I mean, the Friday game, Ohio State just played them incredibly physical. That's the way you have to do it. If you're a team like Ohio State that doesn't have a great record, hasn't been able to produce a lot offensively, you've got to go at a team like Wisconsin and just hit them and try and take away their space. And for the most part, they were able to do that. And you could sense a little bit of frustration growing from the Badgers as the game went on, you know, just not getting those chances that they're usually used to. And eventually, you know, they scored early on the power play, and then they got a power play in overtime and scored on that. So it was two power play goals that won it, both by Dylan Holloway, who's been, you know, just, we've talked a lot about Cole Caulfield. Holloway has been right up there with him, and he's played, I think, 8 fewer games because he was gone for the World Juniors camp for Canada. And you'd really like to see what his numbers would be if he had those 8 games with the Badgers too. And really if the Badgers would be, you know, because when they struggled in the first half, it was when Holloway wasn't here and a lot of other guys because of COVID. But getting back to last weekend, then you turn to Saturday, and it really Ohio State didn't have a lot to match up with. It took a little while. The Badgers were only up 1-0 after one, but in the second period, just opened up, and the Badgers got their game going. And once that happens, it doesn't really matter who they're playing. It's going to be tough to stop. That's what we saw a few weeks ago at Minnesota, which is a really good team, ranked third in the country, you know, leading the Big Ten. and in their home building, the Badgers got to their game, got Minnesota off of theirs, and just rolled. And so that's what you see when the Badgers can play that way. It's gonna be tough for anyone to stop them. So that's something to watch over the next few weeks as we get in the playoffs in 10 days or whatever it is that that starts. You know, our team's going to be able to shut them down because the Badgers are getting good enough defense and goaltending on that end to manage. And it's really just up to how many goals they can pour in on the other side. So, you know, when you get in the postseason, it gets tougher to score usually. So that's what we're going to have to watch there.
Sure. And I don't want to make this sound too simplistic, but what is it about this offense that you think is so effective right now? Like, are they just faster than the teams they're playing, more skilled when they get the puck on their sticks? What is it that you think is really separating them? I mean, we know they've got the talent. We've talked about that a little bit, yeah. But just what in their execution, what do you think that's kind of pulling them away?
Well, it's yes and yes. It's speed, okay. It's talent, it's just skill. And it really comes down to depth. And even if the other lines aren't necessarily scoring, they're using their speed to get chances. And that puts the other team on the defensive. And then right. You roll over to the top two lines with the Ty Pelton Bice line and the Dylan Holloway line. And then they get the scoring chances and they're finishing them. So you go to those things. Then if you know, you take a penalty, that power play has been really, really dangerous. There's just so many different weapons that they have right now, you know, led by Cole Caulfield with Dylan Holloway right behind, but also Linus Weisbach, Ty Pelton Bice, Roman Deshaun, Brock Caulfield. It's just it kind of rolls from one line to another the way they've been playing it lately. And that's what's been giving them those opportunities to put up big numbers.
Yeah. And it makes sense too, because when you think about, as you said, if you're getting chances from all your lines, that's just going to wear a defense down and a goaltender down. Cause at a certain point, there's just when you have that volume of chances and the amount of work you put on them, like if you're making them work each shift, I feel like some teams might have to trade that off when they don't have that depth and kind of just get by with that third or fourth line out there maybe. And the Badgers aren't having to do that.
Yeah. Because every team's got a really good offensive line and a pretty good checking line, right? Usually. So you can match up to an extent, but it's tough to match up when a team's got four lines that all provide a little bit of a different look, and which is kind of what the Badgers have. I mean, the two top lines are pretty skilled. There's just a lot of skill and speed rolling out there. So they're a little similar, but the third line is just a hard line to play against. Tarik Baker at center, Dominic Mersch, Sam Stang, guys that can also bring some speed. I mean, Stang can bring some speed on the right side, but you're going to have to pay for it with Mersch and Baker. Those are guys that will hit you. And then you get to the fourth line, which is another kind of grinder line. And it changed a little bit last weekend because Owen Lindmark was out the center, but they brought in Ryder Donovan to play center, change it up a little bit. And you've got the speed on the left side there with Jack Gorniak. He's probably the quickest guy on the team who can make a lot of things happen with that. And then that just opens things up. If the fourth line can keep teams in their defensive zone for a 20 second shift, that, like you're saying, does just kind of wear them down, beats up the next group, and kind of just the more you have to play in your own zone, the more tired you're going to get. And sure. The days that the Badgers have been really successful, we've seen a lot of that. You know, now it hasn't always been great when teams counterattack quickly. The Badgers have given up some good chances and some goals on that. But in the long run, the more you can keep the other team in their end, the better things are going to go. And that's where we've seen things happen this year.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And we talked about Cole Caulfield a little bit here and a little bit more last week, but have to talk about him again right now, just because had a huge weekend. Two assists on Friday in the overtime win, and then a hat trick on Saturday. You've seen pretty much every minute that he's played for the Badgers. Is right now the best that he's looked with a Badgers uniform on?
I think in a overall total game, yes, because he's added the component of being more consistent, more reliable in his own zone and without the puck. And that was the big thing for him all year, right? That was what he said last, I forget whether it was May or June when we talked to him in the off season, you know, that those are the things he had to do. He, you know, he kind of set this up. He wanted to be the best player in college hockey. He thought he could, and he wanted to be better in his own zone. And playing without the puck, those kind of things that, that you kind of, you have to do to succeed at the next level too, especially when you're going against guys, you know, there are no weak lines at the NHL level. Right.
Right.
And so we've seen him do that. And so you'll credit to him for not only just saying he's going to do it. These were his goals. You know, it was a tough off season, you know, for everyone with COVID. It wasn't, you couldn't do exactly what you wanted to do, mm-hmm. but he came out and he did everything that he kind of said and he put on the table for him to do. And so if you're looking at that in terms of a, you know, a Big Ten award, a national award, I don't know if there's much more you can expect out of a guy. I mean, he sure. scored 22 goals, 21 goals in the Big Ten. He's running away with the Big Ten scoring title in not a bad league. I mean, yeah. that's the other thing. The Big Ten is not always a very easy league to score in, and he's made it look pretty easy sometimes. So you put that all together and yeah, it's, you've got to be impressed by what he's done this year and, you know, building on what he started with last year and really before that and in with the national team program and everything he did there. It's just been this progression.
Sure. And just curious, what, when you say working without the puck, like what are some of the things that you've been able to notice that he's done this year that maybe wasn't there last year when he doesn't have the puck and he's not in control of the flow of the game like that?
Yeah. It's more about knowing where you need to be, knowing where your teammates are in breaking up defensive zone plays and ending plays, getting the puck back. And so it's a lot of times last year we'd see him just hanging around the top of the zone waiting for the puck to turn over and so he could shoot out and start an offensive chance. And now he still does sure. that. I mean, that's not out of his game, but he knows, I think he's got a better understanding of what's happening with the other team, what they're trying to do and how he's able to kind of react to that. And so that just comes with experience of, you know, playing at higher levels as you go up, you're going to start to understand more of what that looks like just being in those situations. And so when he has to go in a little deeper into the defensive zone, he's done that. When he's got to work along the boards to try and win a puck back, he's done that. Those are the kind of things that kind of build into that kind of total full ice game that he's been looking to build.
Gotcha. Okay. So one of the things that we talked about last week was the improvement of goaltending for the Badgers this season. And that carried over into last weekend, obviously two games, only one goal allowed. And we were talking before we started recording that the Badgers have done something a little bit different this year where they've split up the series where one goalie plays on Friday, one plays on Saturday. Robbie Badoon is playing on Fridays. Cameron Rowe is playing on Saturdays. And the stats bear it out that it's working for him, right? That this is this combination, this kind of splitting the load here is not, I wouldn't say the key to their success in goal, but it's certainly helping. So what are some of the things that you think that decision by the coaching staff and by these players kind of embrace this split up role have done to the team on the ice?
It's really made things predictable, I think, in a way for a team that, you know, if you're one of the other players besides goalie, you want to know what you're going to have behind you. And that was something that wasn't always clear the last few years. The Badgers would get some good goaltending and some really mediocre or poor goaltending. And we haven't really seen the poor goaltending. There's been some days this year where it's been mediocre, but we just haven't seen outright poor. And that's, I think that's the step up that has really changed the picture for the goalies this year, that you're going to have a clunker of a game. That happens to everyone. And it's really obvious when you're a goalie, because, you know, in other sports, you know, if you're a cornerback and you have a bad game, a lot of times you're getting cover from your safety and somebody else, or, you know, maybe you just don't get picked on that play. But when you have a bad game and you're a goalie, it shows. It's right. obvious on the stat sheet. So there's, I think the predictability, the stability that they've had, and now in the last 5 weeks, they've, yeah, like you said, they turned to this rotation where, and Tony Granato has wanted to do something like this all season. He just kind of had to force himself into something like this at some point, because he was kind of stuck in a situation where he would give the Friday start to one goalie. That goalie would have a really good game on Friday, and so he felt like he had to go with him again on the Saturday.
Yeah, kind of reward that.
Yeah, you know, why wouldn't you? I mean, you stick with the hot guy sometimes. But he really felt like he had two really good guys to go to. And so, you know, when he just decided, look, I'm going with this and I'm going to stick with it for a few weeks and see how it goes, where we're going to play Bedun on Friday, Rowe on Saturday. They're 8-1-1 in that stretch. Their save percentage, have it written down here somewhere. It was 919 going into that stretch, and it's been 934 since. So that's you know, it's not a huge improvement, but it's significant, I think.
Yeah.
And so you go into this situation now where you're in the last week of the regular season, you've got playoffs coming up, and how do you look at this? I mean, we're going to see it again this weekend against Michigan State. I'm pretty sure it'll be Bedun Friday, Rowe Saturday. But then you get into the playoffs where, you know, you're one and done. And so there's no, you know, I'm saving a guy for this. But like I'm writing about in the story that I'm working on, that'll be in Friday's paper. It kind of reminds me of in the 2004-05 season, Denver did a rotation the whole way through with Glenn Fisher on Friday, Peter Menino on Saturday. And I mean, they stuck with it all the way through the NCAA regionals. So even at the final five, the WCHF final five, Fisher played the first game, got an overtime win. Menino played the second game, won the championship. The regionals, Fisher played the first game, Menino came in the second game. It just was that predictability. And then they turned, once they got to the Frozen Four, they went with Menino for both. The interesting connection there is that Peter Menino was Cam Rowe's coach last year in Des Moines, and he's known him for quite a while. So it's you know, hockey's a small world sometimes. But so that kind of situation can go deep into the playoffs and work. And that's probably the best example of it that I can remember anyway. But that's not necessarily where things will shake out. We don't know where Tony Granato is going to go with things. We don't know what will happen this weekend, what might happen in the Big Ten tournament. At some point when you're a coach, you're paid to make those hard decisions, right? And it's going to be a hard decision when you have to pick someone for one game to win to keep your season going. So I'm intrigued on how that will turn out.
Yeah, and I think just from athlete perspective, and I'm sure it helps these guys not only with the fatigue of not playing those back-to-backs, but just the routine of it. Like, you know, Bedun knows going, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, hey, I've got to get ratcheted up here, I'm going Friday, and then Saturday I can rest, and, you know, vice versa with Rowe going on Saturdays. And I'm sure, I know you said you have a story coming out, so make sure you go on Madison.com and check that out, but I'm sure talking to those guys, the routine of it probably helps them out, just kind of plan out their week and knowing what's going to come.
Yep, the routine, the rest, the predictability. And one of the things about a few weeks ago when I asked Tony Granato about, you know, why it was Bedun Friday and Rowe Saturday, and one of the things that stuck with me is that he said, you know, Bedun's the more experienced goalie. He's older. He's a senior. He's a grad transfer. His first year here, but he played 3 years at Michigan Tech before this. Rowe's a freshman. And Rowe is a little bit more of an I don't know. I can't say he's more analytical, because Robbie Bedun is very analytical. He's a data guy. But Rowe likes to see what he's up against. And so him sitting on the bench in the first game of the series gives him that opportunity to study the other team's shooters. And I think that's paid off. When he's come in, he knows, he's got a little bit of a scouting report in person. You can see things on video, obviously, and prepare that way. But seeing it right up close does change, I think, how you prepare for, you know, what you're going to face from each line that comes out against you. So that I thought was interesting, how they actually, you know, developed which guy was playing which night. It did have some, you know, planning behind it, not just, you know, we're drawing a name out of a hat for to see who goes first.
Right. No, that makes sense. And you said it, you eventually Granato is going to have to decide how he goes, but do you think, let's say they go into the first game of the NCAA tournament and Baydoun gets the win, do you think it would be Roe the next night or if they played again, or do you think they would try to extend this, or would they just have to make a decision? You're the guy for the tournament.
Yeah. You know, if it goes well the next 2 weeks, I don't know why you wouldn't. I really don't, because especially now it will have been a while since anyone's played two games in back-to-back days then, right, at that point. So do you really want to take that chance of, you know,
yeah, in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah. When it's, you know, the season's on the line, it's, you don't get any, you know, grace period there. The difference between the regionals and the Frozen Four is that there is a day off in between in the Frozen Four. So that made that rest, that mental, you know, thing about playing back-to-back days isn't as big there. So I could see that being a difference, and like it was in Denver or with Denver in 05, but I could see them going through with one guy each night too, because it's not like one has been like miles better than the other or anything. Sure. Like that. They've both had their nights where they've been really good, a couple nights where, you know, it hasn't been as great. So I just don't know where I would go with it. I mean, if I'm, and obviously I'm not in the pay scale of having to make a call like that, but I'm really curious to see how you'd make that decision and what the factors would be in when you decide that, yeah, we're going to change it up a little bit now, because you know, there hasn't been a lot of reason to change it so far.
For sure. Make sure you go to Madison.com and check out that story, because it's a big part of the success that they've had over the last 6 weeks or five, 6 weeks here, the way the goaltenders are playing. The Badgers are wrapping up the regular season this weekend at Michigan State. Todd mentioned that earlier, Friday and Saturday up in East Lansing. Not a great year for Michigan State, not a very strong team. So when you go into a series like this late in the year where, you know, the Badgers are kind of on that upward swing and Michigan State's just kind of playing out the string here, what are some of the things that you're expecting or kind of are looking for out of Wisconsin this weekend, Todd?
Well, I think one of the things that's kind of in the big picture scenario here is that if the Badgers don't pass Minnesota for first place and get the quarterfinal bye in the tournament, they could end up playing Michigan State in the quarterfinals. So, gotcha. Or it also, they could end up playing Ohio State. So last weekend, this was the same thing. What I'm about to say is that you don't want to let them feel like they have a chance against you. And so I think that was a big thing of the, you know, yeah, it was a 2-1 overtime victory against Ohio State last week, but then the next night the Badgers came out and just rolled over them. Right. And so that, if it ends up being Wisconsin and it's Ohio State again, you've got to think Ohio State's going to have that a little bit in their head. Maybe it'll be a motivator a little bit, but at some point you realize, man, how we just got beat pretty good by these guys. We've got to change something up pretty significantly to have a different outcome there. And on the Wisconsin side, you're feeling pretty good about, let's do exactly what we did in that game and keep that rolling. And so the same thing with this weekend against Michigan State. You, if it ends up being that you're playing Michigan State again in the quarterfinals, you want to have the last
fresh in their mind.
You two. Yeah. You want that to be setting a tone. So that's what I look at, you know, throw everything else out. Yeah. Michigan State's not really playing for anything. Wisconsin obviously is, they've got a chance at the Big Ten championship. But beyond that, you know, even without that, you still have some tone setting, I guess, that you can do going in the postseason. And, you know, big picture, maybe you're playing for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament at some point with the way you're doing down the stretch, because we don't really know, you know, where the committee thinks or how the committee thinks of the Badgers. I mean, normally we would know by the pairwise ranking exactly what would happen, where they are and what it would take to get to a number one seed. We don't know that right now. So all of the, you know, the eye test factors are going to be important here. If you go into Michigan State and beat up on them, that's going to be important. If you then go into the Big Ten tournament and win a couple games, that's going to be important too, to getting to a higher spot in the seedings for the tournament.
Gotcha. All right. Make sure you're following Todd on Twitter, Todd Molesky on Twitter there. Cause we'll be, are you on East Lansing this weekend or are you covering?
I am as of right now. Oh, okay. That's the plan.
Gotcha. All right. So he'll be up in East Lansing covering Badgers men hockey up there. As we wrap up here, Todd, just quickly want to mention women's hockey, as we talked about last week. Split that series against Duluth, but Daryl Watts in the second game, or on Saturday, I should say, scored late in overtime. They win the WCHA. Not great to split a series. I'm sure they weren't happy losing on Friday, but to win the conference, get kind of rolling there, get into the postseason for them, just, well, what's something to look forward to as they start this WCHA face-off with Minnesota this weekend?
Well, the reward for winning the WCHA this year is a semifinal game in the final face-off against Minnesota at Minnesota. So not what you usually see, because Minnesota doesn't usually finish fourth in the standings. But it's, you know, it's a weird year in a lot of ways. So it was a little surprising to see the Badgers give up 7 goals last weekend on the women's side. That hasn't happened in, I think, 5 years or almost 5 years. And so I think that was there's a wake up call there for the whole team on how you have to play against the better teams in the league to have some success. Because you think about it, they had played Bemidji State, which is, you know, not one of the better teams in the league, didn't allow a goal in 2 games, then had a week off, then went to Duluth for the last week of the regular season. So, you've got to get back into that style of play against, you know, really good teams, where you can't just try and control the puck the whole time. You're going to have to be on the defensive some of the game, and you have to play that the right way. And so I think that, from what I was able to see last weekend while I was also watching the other game, that was one of the things that you really have to commit more to playing on your terms and wanting, sure, getting the game going the way you wanted to play it. And that didn't seem like that was the way the whole time for the Badgers last weekend. And I think that's what they have to establish against a really good Minnesota team that hasn't had the record that you normally would associate with a Minnesota team. So big test on Saturday afternoon, yeah, for the Badgers. And let's see what happens. I mean, they're going to get the NCAA tournament. We know that.
Yeah, they're locked in there pretty much.
Yeah, so everything comes, the bracket comes out Sunday night. So now it's just a matter of, who you end up playing and whether you can get another championship out of this weekend, I guess.
Gotcha. All right. So that was Todd Molesky. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, Todd Molesky on there, on Madison.com as well. Lots of stuff coming from him this weekend. Todd, thanks for jumping on the show. And for you guys listening, we'll be back next week. Thanks very much for listening.